Hello there. Welcome to Values and Ethics from Living Room to Boardroom. It's brought to you by World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Jason Murchie. I'm happy to be, and I'm happy that you're listening. Today's show is self-actualization. I studied psychology, and so I've heard of Abraham Maslow and this theory and some of his research. And I consider him to be kind of a titan, but I think a lot of people probably don't know about him or what self-actualization is. In this era of gurus and motivational speakers and coaches, there's a lot of talk of personal growth and achievement of potential, of being a change agent and a manager or what have you. But separating the wheat from the chaff when it comes to self-improvement is important. So to find the wheat, I'm going to welcome back two prior guests to the show and discuss self-actualization. So please stay tuned for a short commercial, and we will pick up from right here on Values and Ethics from Living Room to Boardroom.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be on the air, behind the mic?
Are you an expert in your field or just passionate about a particular topic?
Then World Talk Radio has a place for you. You could host your own professional show and share your message with the world.
Let us help you start your own radio show today from anywhere in the world.
Call right now to find out how you can become a host. It's easier than you think. Call 858-836-0164 or email us at newshows@worldtalkradio.com.
How do you like your coffee? Not all coffee is the same. Kona coffee beans from Hawaii are some of the best anywhere. But not all Kona coffee is the same. Aloha Island Coffee, handcrafted like fine wine, is a family-owned private Kona plantation. They've created the finest boutique coffee you'll ever drink. Aloha Island Coffee, rare, very special, naturally low in acid and pesticide-free. Click on the banner on the Chef Larry Show page, AlohaIslandCoffee.com.
To reach a show host or guest during the live show, dial toll-free in North America, 866-613-1612. Or if outside the USA and Canada, dial 001-858-268-3068.
Well, continuing here, Abraham Maslow wrote a paper in 1943 called A Theory of Human Motivation, which he subsequently extended. And in it, he talks about basic needs and higher needs, or deficiency needs and growth needs. He wrote a few other books, and I think that the phenomenon, although not popular, perhaps, is meritorious and ought not to be forgotten. And I think we should explore it, because for those of us who are interested in some sort of self-growth, self-improvement, some sort of achieving of human potential, Abraham Maslow is one of the psychologists who really spoke about that and moved the field forward. So what does this term mean, and who is Abraham Maslow, and what does self-actualization mean to your life? Well, to answer such questions, I'm happy to speak with Copthorne MacDonald. He has written quite a few books and has had a long and varied career. You can find out more about him by going to www.cop.com. Cop is his nickname. For example, he is the founder and I guess you could say manager of the Wisdom page, which is significant because there are quite a number of resources there on that somewhat esoteric topic. And if you were to search on Google for Wisdom, his page would be on the first page of Google results, which is it's pretty significant. That's how I came across him, and we've had a number of other associations since. And thus, I'm pleased to welcome him back. Can you hear me, Cop?
I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate that. I'm also going to be speaking with Richard Trowbridge, and Richard's been dedicated to developing more complete humanity for over 40 years. After earning his PhD and completing a doctoral dissertation entitled The Scientific Pursuit of Wisdom, he now teaches, and one of his classes is called Wisdom in the Renaissance, which I think is obviously a very specific class, but really a wonderful idea. He's a member of the Association for Humanistic Psychology and is the founder and, I guess you could say, the shepherd of Transletics, which is a systematic research-based program for optimizing physical, mental, social, and spiritual development. He's trying to help us to create athletes of human potential. So he's an excellent guest to have on as well, and I welcome you, Richard.
Hi, Jason. It's Hi. A pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you for saying that. So we've all been introduced, and we've had a couple of collaborations, and so I'm just tickled that you two are going to be speaking with me and my listeners about this topic that is just slightly shrouded in mystery, but is a very important one. So maybe we'll go in alphabetical order here. Cop, would you like to share some thoughts about maybe who Maslow was and some things that would be relevant to the current discussion?
Sure. Maslow was at the University of Wisconsin and got his bachelor's degree, his MA, and his PhD there. And this was back in the 1930s. And at that time in his life, he was interested in the things that most students of psychology were interested in, which were, you know, helping mentally sick people get better and experiments with animals. He then moved to New York City after he got his PhD and was profoundly influenced by two very special people. One was Ruth Benedict, an anthropologist and the author of a very important book called Patterns of Culture, and Max Wertheimer, who was one of the founders of Gestalt psychology. And these were just super people. They were out of the ordinary. They were just very, very special. And so Maslow decided not to spend his psychological career working on, animal experiments or working with sick people, but finding out what the very most special people had in common, what their characteristics were, and perhaps how people who we would call normal could move in this direction of beyond normal.
Beyond normal. Okay, that sounds interesting. And so is that probably to say that maybe those of us who are grappling with some sort of deficiency or problems or issues probably can't move very far beyond normal? Is it like a stepwise process, or might it be true, like in a movie like, you know, A Beautiful Mind or whatever, that even if one is mentally ill, they do have some ability to touch some of the highest levels of human development?
I mean, if you're looking to me to comment on this, yes, there is that possibility. I mean, and Maslow recognized that there were, everybody sort of has experiences of, you know, let's say beyond normality. But he also came up with this hierarchy of needs theory, which can help, I think, all of us sort of figure out where we are on this spectrum of growth, and maybe Richard would like to talk about that.
Nice pass off, Richard. What do you think about his triangular hierarchy of needs? Does it make good sense? Is it really solid?
Yeah. Well, first, I'd like to say hello, Cop. It's nice to be talking with you.
Feel exactly the same, Richard. Good to talk with you.
Well, let's think about this triangle here that's very well known, the hierarchy of needs going up from our basic physiological needs to the psychological needs of belongingness and esteem. It may as well called the deficit needs. And he felt that these were needs because, and Cop, you can jump in any time, that because we human beings suffered physically and mentally if we didn't have these needs met. Of course, with the lower level needs, you're talking about survival and security here. And then when we talk about the needs for belongingness, may as well refer to studies that have been done of infants in orphanages who didn't receive care and suffered from what's called marasmus, or wasting away and, you know, really stunted or shortened lives. If we were fortunate enough to arrive at a fulfillment of these deficit needs here in this pyramid of Maslow's, then we were able, we had the sufficient conditions to move to self-actualization. And Maslow felt that this was a need also, although it wasn't a dominant need. It could be easily stunted. It could be easily
foregone,
lost here for many reasons. And for part of them, one of them, maybe the most serious, being our own fear of our developing ourselves completely. So, one thing that was really striking to me in considering how well known this pyramid is, I came across a quote or a section by a guy named Richard Oliver, who teaches the Graduate School of Management at Vanderbilt. And he says that in the 21st century, we will come to see this pyramid, like the rest of the world, turned upside down. The quest for self-actualization in all its forms will become the world's biggest industry. I think it makes a lot of sense because there's more and more people now who have the financial wherewithal, the education, and the lengthened life to permit us to really fulfill our inner potential. And so what we need to do is to help, like Maslow tried to do, to point us to the possibilities.
Well, Richard, that was smartly stated, and let me just kind of summarize so that we can try to catch anybody up who might be still having a hard time visualizing what we're talking about. There's a triangle, if you could picture a triangle divided into five parts. The first is on the bottom, and it's the biggest, takes up the most space. Up at the top, you have just a little teeny triangle, and this is his progressive, let's say, hierarchy of needs, you know, hierarchy referring to there being some order, and needs meaning simply those things which humans need. And at the deepest level, not deepest, at the simplest level, humans need physiological things. They need to go to the bathroom, they need to drink water, they need to eat food, some might even say, you know, have sex, sleep, things like this. And in other words, if any of those needs are frustrated, it makes the human really quite out of whack. If you've ever not slept or not eaten, you know you can't really concentrate on much else. And then second, humans need safety. In other words, if you can't feel safe, you're not going to be able to work on parts of yourself that are more sophisticated. And then there's love and belonging. And, of course, you know, we know that humans need love and belonging. And you could think of things like being involved in a community, having social relationships, maybe being touched. And, of course, you know, to love another person does feel great. And then finally, fourth is esteem, which I think means that a person does well to be able to feel good about themselves and to be proud of who they are and what they're doing, where they've been, where they're going, overcoming of deficits, things like this. And then up at the very top is this thing called self-actualization. But I think there's something about the term self-actualization that, I mean, it's definitely, It's not something that is quite easy to dissect. So let's say that Copy were speaking to a 10-year-old. Would you be able to talk about self-actualization in a way that they could understand?
Well, there's one sentence that set me off on the path. My first career was electronic design engineering, and I was working for Westinghouse, and I had just gotten my first management position, and they sent me off to this conference and to learn how to manage people. And Maslow's hierarchy of needs was one of the central things. And I found this interesting. And then especially this idea of self-actualization. And we had a coffee break, and I started talking to an older fellow who had helped organize the conference. And so this concept of self-actualization, it's really interesting. And he turned to me and said, yeah, the idea of becoming all you're capable of becoming. And that phrase has stuck with me, and it was a couple of years after that before I really started moving in that direction myself. But, you know, I think that's something a kid could understand.
Yeah, so essentially it's, Richard, you've been quite interested in the development of human potential for a long time. It's essentially to develop at one's highest, at least in the non-physical sense. Is that fair to say? Would you say that that's what self-actualization is?
That's definitely it in part, Jason. I think there's two tracks in a way that are occurring here. One is maybe a full development of our physical, mental, social, spiritual abilities as an individual. But the question then becomes, what is the self? And when we consider that the self is always changing here, it seems to me that our personality is our individuality, our organism, is a very brief incident in a very long process here. And so, on the one hand, there's that development of our full capacity, mental, physical, social, and spiritual, and also going beyond that to a recognition of our full interrelatedness with the very large and very old cosmos and in general the community around us, our whole social and cosmic environment.
Well, let's.
If I could interject here, there.
Actually, Cop, I probably should ask you not to, because I'm going to have to interrupt you with a commercial if you do. So hold on to that thought, and when we return, I'll give you the first word. Okay, Cop?
Okay, fine.
Actually, I'll have the first word, and you can have the the second. Okay, well, this is Jason Murchie, and the show is Values and Ethics from Living Room to Boardroom. We're talking about self-actualization. And it's brought to you by World Talk Radio. Please stay tuned. I'll continue to speak with Cop Thorne McDonald and Richard Trowbridge about this fascinating and deep topic in just a few minutes.
World Talk Radio.
Abraham Maslow said, "Musicians must make music, artists must paint, poets must write, if they are to be ultimately at peace with themselves. What humans can be, they must be. They must be true to their own nature." It's an interesting thought. Please stay tuned for a short commercial, and I will continue to investigate this topic for my own edification and also to enlighten you. I'll be right back in just a few minutes on Values and Ethics from Living Room to Boardroom.
Dash. It's that little line between your date of birth and date of death that represents your life. Are you living your life by design or by default? Are you as effective as you'd like to be? Dash coaches uncover what you don't see so you can achieve that effectiveness. They empower people and organizations to optimize their Dash. Get your free Dash coaching session today. Call 516-677-9111 or visit dashlive.com.
Guys, confused in the area of dating and relationships? Please allow Doc Love to coach you. He's been featured in major media such as Time and Fox News for his ability to coach you with the fairer sex. Don't miss the Doc Love Show, Understanding Women for Men Only, each Sunday morning on World Talk Radio.
Listen, the world is talking. World Talk Radio.
To reach a show host or guest during the live show, dial toll-free in North America, 866-613-1612. Or, if outside the USA and Canada, dial 001-858-268-3068.
Welcome back. Okay, Cop McDonald and Richard Trowbridge. Hello, you two. Cop, I believe I said I'd give you the second word. I've probably already spoken about 30 or 40, so you can have the 41st.
No, it was just a little expansion on what Richard was saying about the movement toward, you know, even the cosmos. One of the things that happens as we develop psychologically and spiritually is an expansion of identity. I mean, the two-year-old, it's all about me, 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 and now, now, now. But as we develop, we expand our own sense of space to include family and community and eventually, you know, the biosphere and the cosmos and the very end process, there can be an identity with the ground of being, you know, with what has brought all this informational world into existence. So, and with that comes a shift of values, and Maslow had pointed out that at every one of these stages in the hierarchy, you are a different self, and you see the world differently.
And is it also true that you know, your physiological needs are never permanently solved, let's say, or satisfied, and so maybe a person who has some self-actualizing experience or readiness might have to, you know, stop thinking and meditating and experiencing being a citizen of the world and, you know, go to the bathroom. That type of thing happens. Is that right?
Well, absolutely. You continue to have to take care of these various needs. But one of the things that Maslow found was that people further along in this growth process are able to see these lower needs with perspective and are not necessarily like pulled back to the bottom very easily. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And,
I mean, I think they're examples of, I think of Nelson Mandela, who spent many years in pretty much solitary confinement and, came out ahead of the game.
Actually, that was a Hollywood trick that never actually happened. I've got some strange theories about things.
I see. What about the moon, Jason? Landing on the moon.
There is no moon, actually.
I see.
It's just a trick that the man. No, I'll stop with that. Let me ask you, Richard Trowbridge, has Maslow been quite influential in this field of human potential, and what is his reputation? Do people disagree with him? You know, has his theory been proved or disproved?
One of the things with Maslow is that his theories haven't gotten the experimental research done that could be done with them. However, another thing that really impresses me in looking over the literature is how often Maslow is mentioned among all psychologists and people outside of psychology, too, that his reputation really has become, in certain areas, a part of the culture. I think in the 70s, Maslow was misunderstood and still is as kind of emphasizing a sort of narcissistic self-ego development here with the self-actualization. And I think all of that criticism was really based on a incomplete understanding of Maslow's philosophy, ideas of what human are, especially in the later years of his life when he was one of the founders of transpersonal psychology.
So self-transcendence, is that part of what you're referring to here?
Yeah, although I don't think Maslow was ever really very explicit about that. So I think in a way we who are carrying on from his work need to extrapolate a little bit from the groundwork that Maslow laid.
Okay.
I think his movement into this idea of self-transcendence really happened at the very end of his life. As I understand, he started meditating at some point, and he talked about sort of two groups of self-actualizing people, the sort of practical, fully grown in the sense that he had always used, and gave examples like Eleanor Roosevelt and possibly Eisenhower as people who would be self-actualizing in that sense. And then the transcending self-actualizers who he mentioned, Aldous Huxley and Schweitzer and Buber and possibly Einstein as being examples of that. So toward the end of his life, he recognized that there is something more than just this fully functioning self, in fully functioning in the world kind of self. There was a kind of deeper understanding and movement and development that was possible beyond that. Would you say that's correct, Richard?
Yeah, Cobb. I think we really have to understand Maslow's own evolution here. When he started out doing this research on apes or on monkeys, and then, I guess it was from his meeting of certain extraordinary people in New York in the early 1940s that he became more interested in the possibilities of human beings. But so he was constantly evolving himself. He evolved from a person who was pretty strongly atheistic and, pretty outspoken to somebody who had a very deep spirituality towards the end of his life. So, I think as we look at his what he had to say and his own vision here, that we got to understand that Maslow himself was changing and growing throughout his own life, and I think his great contribution to me anyway is his vision, the fact that he saw these possibilities, and that's what he looked for in human beings at a time when psychology was really focused on pathology.
Yeah, in fact, he said, if we want to know the possibilities for spiritual growth, value growth, or moral development in human beings, then I maintain we can learn most by studying our most moral, ethical, or saintly people.
And yeah, that's Maslow, all right. Yeah.
I think it is important, as you say, to think about the context in which he started doing his thinking. This was in the, 50s, let's say, 40s maybe. And, at that time, there were no Anthony Robbins to talk, about how we should achieve our potential and here's how. It's as though he started this whole idea of thinking, what's the highest that a human can go and how can we theorize and study about it. I think, Kopp, I might like to ask you to just name some of the characteristics of a self-actualizing person to make it more concrete about what we're talking about here when we refer to actualizing one's potential.
Well, some of the things that Maslow observed as sort of frequently encountered characteristics was a very basic one is they were focused on concerns outside of themselves. They liked solitude and privacy more than the average person, and they tended to be more detached than most of us from the dictates and expectations of their culture. They were inner-directed to a much greater extent than most people and less influenced by society's shoulds and oughts and pressures. They tended to be creative people, and they appreciated the world around them with a sense of awe and wonder. He noted that in love relationships, they respected the other's individuality and felt joy at the other's successes. They gave more love than most people and needed less. And they loved what they were doing. So the sort of work-joy dichotomy disappeared. They, is this work or is this the most exciting thing in the world? And it was, for many of these people, it tended to be both, in their, what he referred to as their self-actualizing moments, they experienced what they were doing very fully and vividly and selflessly with full concentration and absorption. Those were actually his words. And he also noted that self-actualizing people make the growth choice instead of the fear choice again and again and again. And they are honest and take responsibility. He also noted that it's self-actualization, he said, it was not a matter of one great moment. This is an interesting quote from him. It's not true that on Thursday at 4 o'clock the trumpet blows and one steps into the pantheon forever and altogether. Self-actualization is a matter of degree, of little accessions one by one. So it's a process rather than an end state. And we're all working in that direction. And one of the things about the hierarchy of needs, one of the fundamental ideas that he had was this concept of prepotency, that if we're hungry or thirsty or wet and cold, we're not going to be too interested in the needs above this. So, and then The same is true for all these needs one by one in this hierarchy. So it's a process moving up the hierarchy, and I mean, babies are hunger and thirst, warmth and dryness that they're primarily interested in, and safety needs in our culture are pretty much taken care of by our parents at that point, and teenagers are very much involved with the belongingness and love needs. That tends to be the central of their lives. And working people in their young adults, adulthood tends to be a focus on esteem needs. So if all these things can be fairly well taken care of, then we start to feel this need to grow.
Okay, well, let's take our last commercial here. And if you two would be kind enough to stay with me, we'll have a few minutes on the other side. I'm speaking with Cawthorn McDonald of The Wisdom Page and Richard Trowbridge of Transletics. Please stay tuned, and I will ask them some more questions, especially about Maslow's view on values, a topic that I'm most interested to hear them speak about. Be right back in just a short minute on Values and Ethics from Living Room to Boardroom on World Talk Radio. Abraham Maslow said, "I can feel guilty about the past, apprehensive about the future, but only in the present can I act." The ability to be in the present moment is a major component of mental wellness. I'm under the impression that Kurt Goldstein came up with the term self-actualization, but that Abraham Maslow included that in his theory, The Hierarchy of Needs, and wrote about it and went on to study some of those people in a very rich and qualitative way. And I think that the world is better off because of that. And I imagine that in the future we will have a greater appreciation of Maslow as the world perhaps gets more and more difficult to live in, and as our difficulties in achieving human potential start to dog us even further. We're going to need to look to him and others like him to figure out how we can make the type of improvements to humanity that will really bring about our highest potential. After a few minutes of a commercial break, I'm going to continue to speak with Cot McDonald and Richard Trowbridge about Maslow's view on values and probably a couple other topics too. So stay tuned.
Dream of owning your own business? Franchising may hold the key. Invest in a proven business with proven results. Not sure where to start? Franchise Solutions can help. Franchise Solutions has helped thousands of entrepreneurs find a business to fit their goals and dreams. Find information on hundreds of franchise and business opportunities, as well as tips, advice, and tons of franchise-related resources. Franchise Solutions. Find the business that's right for you. Visit us online today at www.franchisesolutions.com.
Come on, dear, it's time to go.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning.
I know, isn't it great? The early bird gets the worm. I don't want to be late. I hear the fish are really biting. I've got the Jeep all packed.
This man suffers from extreme excitement because he just bought a new Jeep from Carl Berger's Jeep World in La Mesa.
I can smell it already.
Smell? Nobody smells at 4 in the morning.
This man does, because he can't wait to ride in his new Jeep from Carl Berger's Jeep World. Jeep versatility all wrapped up in leather.
Come on, dear, up and at him.
Give it a rest, dear. We're only going antique shopping. The store's not even open.
You, too, could suffer extreme excitability. See the world of difference at Carl Berger's Jeep World. Low prices, great selection, and 5-star customer service. Save time by shopping online at carlberger.com.
Let's go! Let's go!
It's a world of difference. Carl Berger.
Carl Berger's Jeep World. Get excited today. Carl Berger's Jeep World. I-8 at Jackson Drive, La Mesa.
Listen. The world is talking. World Talk Radio.
To reach a show host or guest during the live show, dial toll-free in North America, 866-613-1612. Or, if outside the USA and Canada, dial 001-858-268-3068.
Hi, folks. Well, wonderful that you have stuck with the program thus far. I am quite interested in Maslow's understanding of values, and so I'm speaking with Kothar MacDonald and Richard Trowridge. You can learn more about them by reading about them online on the page that you're currently using to listen to this program. So here's a quotation that I think might be able to kick us off, and then maybe I'll start with Richard to share some things about what Maslow thought about values. He said, the human being is so constructed that he pressed toward fuller and fuller being, and this means pressing toward what most people would call good values, toward serenity, kindness, courage, honesty, love, unselfishness, and goodness. So I like this idea of good values. When I was thinking of trying to figure out what I would name this enterprise that eventually became known as Values of the Wise, I thought about calling it Good Values, but not only does that seem kind of simplistic, it might be a little on the cocky side. So Richard, what do you think?
Maslow talked a lot about values. He had his being values that he identified. He talked about four. He had 14 of them that he listed and considered were part of the stage of self-actualization. So a person who was self-actualized would embody these intrinsic values that he felt, that these were all part of human nature that would come out when we were fully ourselves. You just named several of them. Some of the other ones were ideas of wholeness, effortlessness, simplicity, beauty, justice, playfulness, aliveness, goodness, uniqueness, completion, dichotomy, transcendence. So he talked about these values in probably in all of his books here, and considered them that these were the sorts of values that we felt, that a person felt in these moments of peak experience or of our best moments as human beings. And so this is what we could be, what we should be, what we were born to be, and that he tried to bring about in, among more people. And he said maybe 1 or less than 1% of people were self-actualized, but there's no reason that more of us can't reach that level.
Well, each of us has the potential to experience or to live any value that we choose. I mean, unless one of you disagrees with me, it seems like values are really in the realm of free will. If you want to try to tell the truth and to live the truth and what have you, you're probably not going to be very genetically restrained from doing so. Maybe society would make it hard for you to tell the truth in certain instances, like if, let's say, you were a politician. For the most part, if you want to tell the truth to somebody, then start now, and you can successfully start now. And each of us has the ability to grasp truth to varying degrees, and it is obviously the highest that a person can achieve, you know, in regard to other competing values like deception or, you know, whatever the opposite of truth would be, falseness. Goodness is another one. Beauty. I think that we all have a kind of an understanding at various times of what goodness is really about, what it means, and when we are being good. How does this strike you, Cop?
I think there are two interesting perspectives on this. And they're not in conflict. They sort of work together, I think. One is this one that Richard was talking about, where Maslow felt that when we are grown far enough, we have a certain group of values that are potentially there for us, will be there in actuality. And he saw this in, you know, his examples of self-actualizing people, that they tended to gravitate to the same basket of values. But what you were saying is also very, very true. That we can practice values intentionally and move them from mere ideas in our heads down to a deep level where they do control our decision making, because that's really where our decisions come from, are the values that we've internalized, that we've moved to our guts, that are really a deep part of ourselves. And simply by picking one or more of these values and saying, you know, I'm going to practice this, I'm going to do it, we are moving further along the road that Maslow indicated was there.
It's interesting for me to see that playfulness is one of them, and I think the synonyms that are used are fun, joy, amusement, gaiety, humor, exuberance, and effortlessness. And that's interesting, because it seems as though, you know, you might imagine that the higher you get up the triangle, and that certain needs will be on the boring or dutiful side, but it's just not true with things like beauty and richness and playfulness as being values. That's really interesting. So I guess maybe to have fun is just as good as anything else. Maybe far superior to being bored or being too stiff or something like this. And each of us has times when we are amused and when we're humorous and exuberant. And I think maybe, you know, the trick is, tell me if you think I'm wrong, Richard, but to try to figure out what Maslow suggests the highest values are, and to contrast that with, you know, what you yourself think, what feels right to you, and then just try to go for these values, maybe the way that a bull would charge after a red cape. Richard,
here. One of the amazing things is that when you consider it, our life is so short here. It's over very quickly. And look at this wonderful world that's in front of us here, and all of the people and the animals and just this plants, this beautiful world. And if we're fortunate enough, we've got our deficit needs taken care of, our safety, security, belongingness, esteem needs taken care of here. I mean, what a fantastic show is in front of us here to enjoy, and to just enjoy our own the exercise of our talents and abilities, and just the company of all of the other people that and creatures that we share this world with. But it is amazing that we human beings are capable of choosing any values that we want, as Kopp mentioned too, this is really in a way up to us if we want to a certain extent, if we want to choose values that are unhealthy or maybe not fulfilling, there's nobody's really gonna stop us. I think one of the interesting current contemporary movements is the positive psychology that has really attempted in a quantitative way to carry on the work of Maslow, and also the wellness movement here again is very much in line with Maslow's ideas of self-actualization.
Yes, positive psychology did, to me, it just kind of came out of nowhere, but maybe for somebody like you, Richard, you've been watching that for a lot longer and you saw it develop, but it seems to me all of a sudden there was this thing called positive psychology, and you know, that's pretty neat. In fact, I think Martin Seligman, who is pretty influential, just said to himself, you know, and this is just my guess, he said, you know, the days of doing experiments on caged dogs are over. You know, I'm going to start to study how humans can achieve potential, how they can take some of the things that psychological science has to offer and use it to their benefit to live a richer and more fulfilling life. And so I would imagine that he was evolving throughout the course of his career and thought that, sure, you know, to study these things are really important to us as human individuals, but also us as a society. Kopp, can you say something about the good person and good society?
Well, this is one of Maslow's ideas that resonate with me. That so there are two needs, the good person and the good society. And there's really a lot of, at least potential interaction here. We, frankly, live in a culture in North America here where society is not there helping us grow a whole lot. I mean, there are definitely little pockets that if we look, you know, seek them out, yes, they can provide us with the kind of influences we need and to, you know, become that good person, quote unquote, that Maslow was looking for, and he would put, you know, his self-actualizers as the good people, what we're heading for. And the good society is, you know, in his words, is one that fosters the fullest development of human potentials, of the fullest degree of humanness. So we don't really have that good society yet, but there is a feedback. As I see it, the good institutions in this good society are institutions that are being run by the values of the wise, if you will. And they're only going to be built into these institutions by people who already have these values. So there is this movement from people who have superior values to institutions that have superior values. And then once those values, those institutions exist, then they can foster the development toward self-actualization, toward wisdom, whatever we want to call it, of other people. And unfortunately, our present society does not have that many institutions that, you know, are helping us move in this direction. But fortunately, there are some, and we just have to intentionally go try to seek them out.
That's why your program is really particularly valuable, Jason.
Thanks, Richard. Kopp, you know, sometimes I get a little bit shy about using words like good and superior. Do people who are a little on the politically correct side, maybe people who kind of misunderstand liberalism, do they ever seem to take the perspective that, you know, how can we say that this or that is better than this or that? I mean, is it not insulting to somebody to say, you know, my values are better than your values? What do you think about that idea?
Well, I think that this whole thing of relative values has been a shame. That there, I mean, I think in very concrete sense, their values are not arbitrary. There are a lot of values that are sort of built into the process. You know, the cosmic process, and I go along with Maslow's idea that there are a set of very superior values that are there in all of us in potential, and they're revealed in actuality as we develop as human beings. excuse me. He even thought that these values, the being values, might just be aspects of some larger thing that might be, you know, the combination of the good, the true, and the beautiful. And these values are just aspects of this final goodness that exists in potential, and to the extent that we human beings come to understand it and resonate with it, it can be there in actuality.
That's interesting. It sounded like you were sort of describing a photograph. I've seen the photograph, and so I understand what you're describing, but I also see how complex it is what you're trying to describe. Well, we have to end here, but you know, I think it's interesting that Maslow would study highly functioning people and using his own intelligence and his experiences. You know, his dad was a womanizing, heavy drinking type guy, and you know, he said he spent a lot of his time in libraries without friends when he was growing up, and so I think he might have sort of gone through the fire the way that a strong sword is tempered and folded and made into a, you know, a type of, I think he was moving toward something that was really rich and true, something that most of us don't have the opportunity to really grasp. But I do, as you say, Cop, I'm fairly confident to say that, you know, being values or some other categorization of values really is better than the next thing, you know. And if somebody would like to argue, then unfortunately they would have to argue why something besides justice is better than justice, or why complexity is better than simplicity, or why boringness and seriousness and staleness are better than playfulness, and why deception is better than truth. And so I think that even though it might ruffle the feathers of the politically correct crowd, I think it is fair to say that, you know, certain values can be shown in various ways to be better than others, and that to follow those values to the degree that they work for you as an individual is really going to turn out to be the best that you can do. I think if there's something that's within somebody that is superior to truth, well, then they should follow that. But I'm not sure that there ever will be.
Right.
So, well, thank you so much for your time today. And I sensed a lot of, I was honored by some of the things that you two said. I'm happy to also note that in later June of 2006, the three of us have an essay in a book called Living a Life of Value that is being published by Values of the Wise Press. And so that will be exciting. I'll be happy to send you two some copies. And
Of course,
again, I thank you for your participation in that. And in addition to the three of us, there are 72 other contributors, and we're all trying to talk about a life of value. What does it mean to live a life of value? I think of it as a kind of deep investigation of values. For example, the idea of beauty is really difficult to define and to really grasp, as though you're trying to describe a photograph. And so to hear a story that somebody tells that they think is about beauty can be helpful to us as we think about what beauty means to us. So I thank you for your time again, and I will talk with you both later.
Thank you, Jason.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and I join my voice along with Richard's in thanking you for doing what you're doing.
I appreciate that. Well, please tune in next week. I will try to have another show for you that is interesting and unique. My goal is to bring shows to the table that you won't find anywhere else. Ones that are not perfect in that soundbitey type of way, but that are a true and deep investigation of values and ethics. So please stay tuned next week to Values and Ethics from Living Room to Boardroom on World Talk Radio.